He laced our fingers together and pulled me toward the door, responding over his shoulder without stopping.
I may never come back out.
My breath quickened as the elevator neared the top floor. We weren't alone in the car, yet the only thing I could smell or hear was Brody. I watched his chest rise and fall in the reflection on the shiny silver doors, and my breaths began to match his. He was standing behind me, and I could feel his every breath. I didn't try to fit my breathing into his pattern. My body just naturally joined in with his. It wasn't going to be the only rhythm that came to us innately. There was no doubt of that. Raw sexual chemistry had been running like a current between us since the first day we met. The sound of the lock closing behind me echoed through the hotel suite. I walked a few feet inside of the room but didn't turn around. Brody was behind me. He wasn't touching, yet I could feel him near. He tossed his keys onto a table. They rattled loudly. My body was so fired up, so filled with anticipation, that the sound actually made me gasp a little. The suite was dark. It seemed to intensify what I heard, what I smelled, what I felt. Brody's hand gripped my hip from behind as he moved in closer. He swept my hair to one side with his other hand. When his head dipped down, and he ran his nose along the pulse line of my throat, I let out a small moan, lifting my arms over my head and wrapping them around his neck. Thoughts of what was about to happen made me weak in the knees.
"There are so many things I want to do to you."
Brody's voice was low and gritty, filled with all of the want and desire I was feeling myself.
"Like what?"
He kept his mouth at my ear while his hands caressed my body. Slowly, he ran his fingers down my side, from my hip over the curve of my waist, then around to my front, cupping both my breasts in his hands. He squeezed firmly.
"I want to suck on your tits. Hard. Nibble on your nipples until you can't take it anymore."
"What else?" Any shyness I had was gone. The man made me desperate.
"Then I think I'll eat you out. I want you to sit on my face while I do that, so you can control where you want me to suck, how hard you want to ride my tongue."
"Oh, God."
"Then, when you're good and wet, when you're soaked for me and I can smell that you want me, I'm going to hold your hands over your head and fuck you. I won't be able to go easy the first time. We'll save that for the morning when the sunlight streams in on your naked body, and I can watch the way your face changes with every stroke. Listen to the way your breath changes as I bury myself deep inside of you."
Brody's hands left my breasts and ran down the front of my body. He sucked on my earlobe and gripped my sides, pulling me against him. His erection was straining through his pants and pushing all the way up to my lower back.
"This ass. I'd like to have that, too. Maybe not tonight, but someday soon. I want to be inside every part of this body. Try everything with you. Own every piece of this body."
I pushed back, rubbing my ass harder against him. He groaned.
"That first day I met you in the locker room, I was hard the entire afternoon after you left. Not even a cold shower with a bunch of hairy football players nearby could calm me down. I came home and jerked myself off to a visual of your face on my eyelids."
He spun me around, wisely holding on to me when he did. I was lightheaded from all the blood rushing to other parts of my body. Then he devoured my mouth, kissing me in a way I'd never been kissed before. Dominant, yet not forceful. Composed, yet needing. There was no question he was in control of my body. Our tongues tangled, lips meshed, and bodies melted into each other, separating for only as long as it took. He lifted my shirt off. Lowering his head, he pushed down my bra cup with his thumb and drew a nipple into his hungry mouth. I closed my eyes as his tongue swirled and sucked. He alternated between breasts, licking and nibbling until I was panting. When he ran his hand under my skirt, he groaned at finding I wasn't wearing any underwear. "Fuck, you took them off." He slid one finger inside me. I was already wet and ready. He groaned and added a second finger. "I really wanted to take my time with you the first time, but I need to be inside you right now. I'll make it up to you later, I promise." He wasn't kidding. A minute later, I heard the tear of a condom wrapper, and I was up against the wall. "Tell me this is okay. I want to take you against the wall. Hard."
"It's more than okay."
"Thank fuck." He bunched my skirt up and lifted me into the air. "Wrap your legs around me."
I did, and he walked us to the wall and pinned my back up against it. He positioned himself and then lifted me up slightly, bringing me down onto his cock. I gripped his shoulders, a moan billowing from my lips as he sunk inside of me. Then he stilled.
"You okay?"
"Very."
He reclaimed my mouth and began to ease in and out of me. My body wrapped around him like a fist, and each gentle stroke massaged up and down, zapping more and more nerves to life. I didn't remember anything feeling that good before, especially not the first time. After he sufficiently unraveled my tight body, he began to move faster, harder. Longer, deeper, stronger strokes. One hand gripped my ass tightly. His rhythm ramped to a pounding, and we both groaned as he seated himself deep and began to gyrate his hips around, grinding the base of his cock against my clit. Letting go, my muscles began to spasm around him.
"Brody!"
He amped up his pace even more.
"Fuck."
As he drove into me relentlessly, my body finally gave in, pulsing in orgasm all around him. When my body went limp, he sped up his pace for a few thrusts, then rooted himself deep within me, allowing his own release. Many hours and more orgasms later, my head lay on Brody's chest as I listened to his heartbeat. Filled with new hope, I fell asleep feeling oddly calm. Maybe it was euphoria from the best sex of my life. Maybe it was the way I felt safe and protected as Brody wrapped me tightly in his arms. Whatever it was, the feeling wouldn't last long.
Brody, Chapter 13. It was late by the time I finally got to Marlene's place. It took me nearly 2 hours to drag my ass out of bed once Delilah left for work. And I'd made her late, too, but I couldn't resist one more go-around when I saw her in that little black skirt she was wearing. She was dressed so prim and proper, with the high-heeled pumps and her hair pinned up on top of her head. My hard-on was raging to bend the librarian over the bedframe. She left with her clothes slightly disheveled, her hair hanging loose, and a just-fucked smile on her flush face. It was a good look for her. A really good look. I'd be paying for a night of pretty strenuous cardio later. Midweek practices were always the hardest. It was going to be a killer after last night and barely any sleep. But I didn't give a shit. I hadn't felt this good in a damn long time. 4 years, to be exact. Grouper was cleaning the floor in the dining room when I passed by on the way to see Marlene. Without a ball to float his way, some improvisation was needed. The lunch service was done for the afternoon, but the staff was still putting away the leftovers. So I grabbed 3 small milks from a crate that one of Grouper's maintenance guys was lifting and yelled, "Go along, or you're going to be cleaning up a puddle of cow piss." Grouper grumbled something, but took off running toward the other end of the food hall. I sailed the first 2 mini milk cartons into his hands. Just as he was about to catch the 3rd one, Shannon yelled to me and distracted Grouper. The 3rd milk went through his open hands and hit him in the shoulder, right before falling to the ground and exploding all over the place.
You can't throw for shit.
Super Bowl MVP, old man. Super Bowl MVP. Shannon's face warned me my afternoon was not going to be as uplifting as my morning. What's up, Shannon?
She's having a bad day, Brody.
Her voice cracked as she reached out and touched my forearm. The nurses at Marlene's home were incredible. They'd seen so much heartbreak with these old people, it took a lot for them to get choked up. Physically or mentally?
Mentally. She remembers some things about Willow. Things she hasn't remembered in a long time.
Marlene was distraught and crying when I entered her room. I sat down on the side of her bed and took her hand. What's going on, Marlene? I couldn't judge what her memory was haunting her with, and I didn't want to make it any worse than it needed to be.
It's Willow.
Over the past 4 years, I had learned to talk about Willow. It hadn't been easy at first, but time had dulled the pain that hearing her name had made me feel in the beginning. What about Willow?
She called me last night, said she was going to come see me next week for my birthday. Then the police came this morning.
I looked to Shannon, who shook her head.
Someone did call her phone last night.
She lifted Marlene's chart and flipped the pages.
The night nurse wrote it down. We suspect it was a telemarketer. Maybe the person happened to have had the name Willow?
Marlene began to sob. Shannon whispered,
She's been doing that off and on for hours. Keeps rambling on about the police and a body in the river.
Blocking Willow from my daily life was one thing, but the memories were still buried inside of me. Our memories. The good ones outnumbered the bad, even if the bad ones overshadowed the good. It's okay, Marlene. It's going to be okay. I was reassuring her the same way I had 4 years ago in the hospital waiting room. The same internal battle haunted me. Only now, Marlene's dementia wasn't early onset. The days when she remembered the details of her granddaughter's life were few and far between. There was less reason to tell her the whole truth now than there had been back then.
Blue. She was so blue, Brody.
The vision that had taken me almost a year to stop seeing every time I closed my eyes came barreling back. Willow being wheeled into the emergency room. By the time the river incident happened, she was already frail. My Willow was long gone, replaced by a 3-bag-a-day heroin junkie who would disappear for weeks at a time. Her occasional visits were usually to steal what we were no longer willing to give her. Marlene's cry broke into a sob. I wrapped my arms around her. The night they pulled Willow from the East River wasn't a night I ever wanted to reenact. Unfortunately, this was our second go-round on the highlight reel of Marlene's life. If only the memories people lost were just the bad ones.
They don't think she's going to make it, Brody.
I know. It's okay, Marlene. It's okay. Bits and pieces of that night continued to flush out for the next hour.
80 degrees. They said her body temperature was 80 degrees.
They're trying to warm her up. They're doing everything they can, Marlene. I went along for the ride. There was no reason to make things worse. Like last time, I comforted her until the episode passed. There was no reason to break her heart all over again, to catch her up on all the bad things just so she could live through hell again, and likely not remember it the next day. The sedative the nurse gave Marlene finally kicked in, and she calmed down, eventually falling asleep. You got one of those injections for me? I joked when Shannon came in to check on us.
You have practice today.
I do. She smiled ruefully.
Then no, but if you'd like to speak to Dr. Palin, she's making rounds. I can page her to come in and talk to you.
Thanks, Shannon, but I'm good. How long will that thing knock her out for?
She'll probably be out for most of the day.
She put her hand on my shoulder as I sat watching Marlene sleep.
Don't worry, Brody. We'll keep a good eye on her. We'll call you if anything happens or if she wakes up upset again.
I'll stop back after practice tonight.
I'll make sure the night nurses know she can have a visitor after hours.
Thanks. To say I got my ass kicked during practice would be putting it too mildly. Between the physical toll of staying up all night and my head being a fucking mess from the shit that had gone down with Marlene, it was no surprise that I found myself tossed around like a sack of hay. At one point, the practice squad actually started to go easy on me, which just pissed off Coach even more than my slacking. After practice, my knee was blown up like a balloon from all the twisting it did every time I got my ass knocked down. The team physical therapist ordered me a 15-minute soak in the ice bathtub. As if the morning stroll down memory lane hadn't fucked with me enough, a soak in freezing water was just what I needed to remind me all over again of Willow's ice-cold body being pulled from the Hudson.
Delilah. Chapter 14. Brody texted every day after our night together. And we'd spoken on the phone twice. I'd grown up only catching glimpses of my dad during football season, so I wasn't surprised he was busy. But that didn't stop me from feeling disappointed. The sex had been nothing short of spectacular. Yet it was the hours we'd spent in bed talking that had me feeling something that I hadn't felt in years. Hope. That's what our night together gave me. I'd almost forgotten what it felt like. As I boarded the plane to Texas for the Steels away game, I was reminded why I'd given up hope after Drew. Because getting your hopes crushed sucked. I headed to my assigned seat in row 26 as the captain came over the loudspeaker and asked everyone to take their seats quickly. We'd been cleared for departure early, and with a storm front moving in, he didn't want to lose our place in the takeoff queue. Great. A freaking storm. Just what I want to hear. The traffic on the way to the airport had been so heavy, I hadn't had time to grab a drink and get my Xanax down until 5 minutes ago. I was going to be a disaster for takeoff. As I arrived at my row, Brody looked up and caught my eye from his seat a few rows back. Feeling awkward, I smiled and rushed to stow my bag. I was checking my seatbelt for the third time when Brody's voice startled me. "Connors," he addressed the reporter sitting next to me, "row 31. He thumbed toward the back of the plane. The reporter looked up at Brody, then at me. "We're about to take off." "Yeah, that's why you should hurry up." "All my stuff is in the overhead. I'll bring it to you once we're in the air. There's a bottle of Merlot waiting and an empty seat next to you." He huffed, but Connors made the switch. Brody settled in beside me. "Guess you didn't notice the empty seat next to me." I actually hadn't. I was preoccupied with getting seated, and trying not to focus on the fact that we're going to be in the air and my Xanax has another 20 minutes before it kicks in. Just then, the plane began to taxi away from the gate. It was barely a bump, and we were moving at a snail's pace, yet my hands gripped the arms of the seat. Brody peeled back my white-knuckled fingers and laced them with his. "I gotcha." "When we're careening from the sky 500 miles an hour toward the earth, will you have me then?" His eyebrows shot up. My insides were starting to freak out, and I couldn't control it. I felt my heart racing inside my chest. Brody turned around in his chair and spoke to the reporter behind us. 5 rows back, 31A. Pass that bottle of Merlot up." I downed a glass before we took off. It wasn't really helping. Especially not when the captain came on again to give us an update, letting us all know we were third in line for takeoff, and we should be on our way in 5 minutes. "You know, I earn a good living with that hand." Brody's eyes narrowed on our joined hands. Mine was squeezing all the color from his, except where my nails were nearly piercing his skin. "Sorry."
"I'm teasing. Squeeze away."
He leaned toward me.
"I like the feel of your nails digging into me. I miss the way they scratch at my back when you're close and I slow down."
"Really? You're going to go there when I'm busy trying to have a panic attack?"
He chuckled. "You need a distraction."
"Well, how about talking to me about the weather? Or sports?
Did you know the Eagles punter holds the record for the most consecutive games for a player since 1971? Or that there are currently 8 players named Smith in the league, which is the record for... I was rambling. Mid-sentence, Brody decided to shut me up. His mouth descended upon mine, kissing me in that way that made me weak in the knees. Aggressive, controlling, it felt like he couldn't get enough. I was entirely lost in the kiss, and didn't even notice that the plane had taken off until we came up for air. See? Takeoff is awesome if you just sit back and enjoy the ride. I'll have to try that more often. Wonder who will be sitting next to me on the way home. Not even funny. The way he looked at me quelled the growing feeling of uneasiness that had crept up the last few days. It was football season. I, of all people, should know that was where his focus needed to be. We caught up for a while until my Xanax began to kick in, and I eventually leaned my head on his shoulder and dozed off. When I woke up, we were already landing. I wasn't sure you were breathing there for a while. I stretched in my seat. I was really out. I know. I tried to wake you to join the Mile High Club, but you didn't budge. Got as far as slipping off your panties, but after that you were like dead wood.
You did not.
He shrugged and smirked, then went back to studying his playbook. I smoothed out my wrinkly skirt, and while I was at it, I discreetly checked for panties. Brody didn't look up from his book when he spoke. Knew you'd check. 2 buses transported us from the airport to the hotel. Rather than the normal lobby check-in, we were escorted to a conference room where a half dozen hotel staff walked around with a checklist and gave out key cards. Of course, Brody didn't need to give his name.
Good afternoon, Mr. Easton. Welcome to Sonetta Hotel. I'm Gail. If there is anything out of the ordinary that you need, both mine and the manager's cell phone numbers are on the back of this business card, and here are 2 keys to your suite.
She scribbled something down on her clipboard and turned it toward Brody, handing him a pen to sign. Thank you. Gail turned her attention to me.
Are you with the team or press?
She's with me, Brody responded.
The clerk nodded and looked like she was about to move on in the room full of players, so I piped in.
I'm also a guest here. I need to check in.
Brody narrowed his eyes at me, then spoke to Gail.
She doesn't need a room.
Yes, I do.
You're not planning on being in my bed tonight?
Gail looked as uncomfortable as I did with this conversation. I didn't say that. But if you embarrass me any more in front of this nice lady, no, I won't be in your bed tonight. I turned to Gail.
Maddox, 2Ds.
Brody didn't say another word until Gail was done checking me in. Then he extended his hand, offering her the key cards back.
I'd like to check out.
Excuse me?
I'd like to check out. I don't need the room. I'm staying in hers.
He nodded toward me. Poor Gail looked confused. Your room is a suite, Mr. Easton. Ms. Maddox's is a standard room.
Does hers have a bed?
It does.
I'd like to check out.
My room was on the 6th floor. Just as Gail had said, it was standard. A bed, dresser, small mini-fridge, TV and bathroom. Brody stored our suitcases in the closet while I went to freshen up. I felt like I'd just woken up from a full night of sleep, rather than a medicinally induced nap. When I came out, Brody was lying in the center of the bed, his hands clasped leisurely behind his head.
You didn't want to stay with me?
It was the first time I'd ever heard his confidence waver. There was something endearing about it. I hiked up my skirt and climbed onto the bed, straddling his hips. I have to put my expense reports in each week, and I didn't want anyone to ask where my hotel bill is.
Why would they care if you didn't put in a bill? You'd be saving them money.
My boss already gives me a hard time. He was against my being promoted. It was his boss who picked me for the job.
Why didn't he want to give you the job?
Because he's a sexist jerk who thinks women don't belong in the locker room. Sound familiar?
I just gave you a hard time because I thought you were hot as shit.
I was trying to do my job.
I know. I'm a selfish bastard. I didn't really think about that. I just wanted to screw with you, and I got carried away.
And what about Susan Metzinger? You were so vocal that she shouldn't be allowed in the locker room.
Susan Metzinger shouldn't be.
And why not? I hoisted my women's lib flag proudly. She came into the locker room and grabbed my junk.
I wasn't interested.
Really?
Yep. Gleason from WNBC caught the whole thing on film. He was interviewing Smith at the locker next to me.
He paused.
One of the seven Smiths.
Why didn't you expose her? She ran you through the ringer in the media.
I guess I felt bad for rejecting her.
So you really don't have anything against women in the locker room?
I have something against you in the locker room.
He pulled me from sitting to lying on top of him. Why?
Because the only dick I want you seeing these days is mine.
That's an oddly sweet statement.
I'm an oddly sweet kind of guy. Now shut up and kiss me.
My bottom was still sitting on his hips, but I was bent at the waist, my chest pressed to his. My lips rested lightly against his. I'm on top, you know. You told me this wouldn't be your favorite position with me.
Better make sure I was right.
Brody had a team meeting, and I had some work to do. When he came back, we ordered a ridiculous amount of room service and spent the rest of the night in bed. Since I'd had a nap, I wasn't tired. And since Brody only required 4 to 6 hours of sleep, even though he did 10 times the exercise of most in-shape humans on any given day, he wasn't tired yet either. After a few more go-rounds exploring each other's bodies, we were back to our own unique form of getting to know each other. That was, I asked normal questions, and Brody shot off ridiculous ones. For the most part, it kept things light, until he stumbled unknowingly onto the part of my life that I didn't talk about. I was tracing figure eights on his bare chest when he came out with yet another oddball question.
If you could interview anyone from your life, living or dead, who would it be?
I didn't think about my answer, but perhaps I should have. Drew Martin. My finger stopped drawing. The second the words came out, I wished I could take them back.
Why do I know that name?
He was in the draft the year after you. Second round. Kicker. Brody shifted us so we were both lying on our sides. I would have preferred to keep my head on his chest, where he couldn't look at my face.
Should I be jealous?
He said it, half-joking. I don't think so. I swallowed. The words never got any easier to say. He's dead.
Was he a relative of yours?
I shook my head.
He's from your life?
I nodded.
Do you want to talk about it?
Not really. He surprised me when he pulled me to him and kissed the top of my forehead.
Okay. We'll talk about it when you're ready.
Delilah. Chapter 15. The Steel had a game on Sunday, and then were playing on Thursday night again. Since it was a short recovery week, the team was heading back home right after the game, rather than leaving on Monday morning. That meant there wouldn't be locker room interviews after the game Sunday. Field reporters could attempt to grab a key player or two as they walked off the field, but regular access to the entire team was limited to an after-practice open locker room. Reporters could enter at 5 tonight. I worked from my laptop at the hotel in the morning, managed to drag my ass to the gym for a 45-minute run, and got to the field where the Steel were practicing by 3. I climbed the bleachers and sat watching the special teams unit run through drills. It had been a really long time since I'd sat on the cold metal on a chilly fall day to watch a practice. Even though a huge part of my life had been spent on the bleachers of a football field, it was almost as if my life was in two acts, and the curtain had come down on part one. Yet here I was back again. It was almost surreal. Talking about Drew last night and watching the team my father captained for so many years weighed heavy on my heart. When Drew and I had first started dating, he was a hardcore soccer player. He'd never even tried football. I remembered the first time I brought Drew around to meet Dad. We were in 10th grade, and he was half starstruck to meet the great Tom Maddox. Dad told him to have a seat and spent the better part of 2 hours selling him on the benefits of being a football kicker rather than a soccer player. That fall, Drew tried out for the varsity football team and became the starting kicker. A loud whistle brought my attention back to the field. Brody had been talking to Coach Ryan on the sideline while the special teams unit finished up on the field, but the practice squads were changing places now. The offensive linemen jogged onto the field while the other players jogged off. I couldn't hear anything, but I watched intently as Brody took his place behind the center and pointed to various things. Players made adjustments and moved around at his command. The man was no different off the field than he was on. He was aggressive, confident, aware of everything going on around him, and completely in charge. I felt like a high school cheerleader, but I was also a little turned on watching Brody in action so closely. I'd missed this part of my life. I loved the game itself, but watching someone I cared about play out on that field did something to me. The catches, the leaps, the sheer athleticism of 22 men joining together to form one unit and compete. There was something just so innately beautiful about it. Even though I'd never stopped being involved with football, something reawakened in me while I watched from the bleachers that afternoon. I wasn't sure if it was my love of the sport or hope that I could one day again combine my love for the sport with a man on the field. The locker room had a very different vibe after practice than it did after a game. It was more relaxed and laid back. Even coaches were laughing. Nick had flown in that morning, so I found him, and we got an interview with a rookie wide receiver who was starting this weekend, then moved on to bigger fish. Brody was surrounded by his usual long line, so I looked around for another player to grab in the meantime. Curiosity had me on the second longest line for more than one reason. Colin Anderson was about to play his first game with the Steel, and no one had yet discovered the reason behind the college feud with Brody. Colin was changing at a locker 4 over from Brody, but the one player who was utilizing the space between them had already disappeared into the shower. Nick and I waited a solid 20 minutes before we were next to interview Colin. In my peripheral vision, I caught Brody eyeing where I was. He looked at me, glared at Colin, then turned his attention back to me until our eyes met. When it was our turn, I introduced myself as I normally would. "Hi, Colin. I'm Delilah Maddox with..." "Brody Easton." He gave me a sly smile and then looked over at Brody, who was doing his own interview. But the two men locked gazes for a brief second. "Actually, I'm with WNBC Sports News." I attempted to change the subject. "Could I ask you a few questions for our Sunday pregame report?"
"Anything for you."
Just what I need. "Ready, Nick?" I had a bad feeling and wanted this over before I'd even started. Luckily, Nick never took long, and we were rolling 30 seconds later. Congratulations on your trade, Colin. Are you excited to play your first game with the team on Sunday?
I am. I've only been here a few weeks, but it feels good. I think I've found my home with the Steel.
Even though I was dying to ask what had happened with him and Brody back in college, I didn't. Something told me that Colin was looking for a reason to screw with Brody, and I wasn't going to be the spark to ignite that old fire. The interview went off without a hitch. Colin was actually charming and very professional. After it was over, Nick lowered his equipment, and I tossed my microphone into my bag. Thank you for your time, Colin. Best of luck Sunday. He caught me off guard when he leaned in and kissed my cheek. The pleasure was all mine. As I started to walk away, he stopped me.
I'm in Suite 801. I don't mind sharing if you're down with it. It'll be like the old days for Brody and me.
What the hell?
Come on, Delilah, Nick said. Locker room is only open for another 10 minutes. We need to get Easton in the can.
My head was spinning while we waited to interview Brody. Was that what the feud had been about? The two of them had been sharing women in college? I wasn't naive. There was a certain group of women who would do anything to be with a player. They didn't even have to be professional yet. In fact, the football groupies were even more prevalent in college. Young bodies, raging hormones, and the stardom that came with televised Big Ten football. Brody's confidence with women hadn't come from sitting in his dorm room studying. I knew there was ample opportunity for players. I even knew he was a player. I just didn't need that reminder shoved in my face about the man I was sleeping with, a man I had started to fall for. I was glad there were a few people ahead of us. It gave me time to cool off and remind myself that being inside this locker room was for my career, not for my personal life. I needed to act like a professional. When our turn came to interview Brody, I put on my best game face.
Long line for you today. I promise to make it quick.
What did he say to you?
Who? I knew damn well who.
Anderson.
He answered my interview questions.
And after he kissed you, what the fuck did he whisper in your ear?
I had been hoping he hadn't caught that. It was nothing.
Delilah,
he growled. Can we discuss this later? I'd rather have this talk in private. Brody turned to Nick and stared at him. Nick had been fiddling with his camera, but he caught on quick.
You want me to give you a few minutes?
I said no at the exact same time that Brody said yes. Poor Nick looked torn.
Give us a minute, will you, Nick?
Brody was asking, but the sternness in his voice made it not really a question. Nick stepped away.
What did he say, Delilah?
It's not important.
To me it is. Was he hitting on you? I can handle that if that's what you're worried about. I'll have a talk with him another time, but I won't cause a scene if that's all it was.
I looked in his eyes. He was sincere. Yes, he was just flirting. Told me he didn't mind sharing. That sharing with you would be just like the old college days. I expected Brody to be angry. I also expected him to keep to his word not to cause a scene. Shit, was I wrong. In a matter of seconds, all hell broke loose. Brody slammed Colin up against a locker. Reporters were yelling, players hurdled benches to get to the two men, and coaches were ripping bodies out of their way to get to their star players. Brody threw a punch. Someone grabbed Colin and jerked him to the right. And Brody landed a fist into a locker so hard, the metal was dented by a massive fist print. Both men attempted to get at each other, but there were so many people holding them back, no actual blows were exchanged. When the two of them were separated, Coach Ryan blew a loud whistle, and yelled for everyone except the team to vacate the locker room. Reporters were wrangled like cattle to the exit.
"What the hell is between those two?" Nick asked me when we were out in the hall.
I had no idea, but I was about to find out. Delilah. Chapter 16. It was after midnight when the hotel room door creaked open. When Brody hadn't come back after a few hours, I'd assumed he wasn't staying in my room tonight. And that was just fine with me. After the way he'd reacted, I had no desire to be around him. Obviously, the two men had history. But he wasn't the only one who would suffer the consequences from today. Behaving the way he did validated to men like Mr. Cum that women didn't belong in the locker room. Not to mention that I really didn't need any more attention on my personal life. My job was to report stories, not be the story. Yet, as I tossed and turned, unable to fall asleep, I wondered if he was okay. The room was pitch dark. I considered pretending to be asleep. Morning would likely bring more clarity. Not much good usually came from getting upset at midnight. Brody didn't turn on any lights. He made his way to the other side of the room, and I heard him unzip his pants and toss them on the chair in the corner. He didn't turn on the light in the bathroom until the door was closed. A few minutes later, the bed dipped, and he slipped in beside me. My eyes were shut, but I could feel him looking at me.
Her name was Willow.
His voice was barely a whisper, and there was a sadness to it that made me forget I was pissed at him in an instant. Even though the room was virtually dark, I could see his eyes. They were filled with an anguish that caused a physical ache in my pounding chest. I cupped his cheek, and he closed his eyes for a few moments. When he reopened them, he continued.
I was 13 when she moved in next door to me. She and her mother moved in with her grandmother. She was beautiful and wild. I wasn't a saint, that was sure as shit, but Willow, she just had a streak in her.
He paused for a long time. I wanted to say something, but I couldn't find the right words. It was obvious that wherever this story would lead, it wasn't going to end well. So I waited until he was ready.
Her mother was a drug addict. She didn't stick around very long. She'd disappear for months at a time, and every once in a while she'd reappear long enough to rob her mother blind and screw up Willow all over again.
I'm sorry.
We did normal, wild teenager things, like pool hopping in the community pool, taking the train to jump off the rocks into the Harlem River where the waterway meets Spuytendyvil Creek, or stealing a bottle from a grandmother's liquor cabinet and riding the subways while passing it back and forth in a brown paper bag. Teenage shit. But Willow was always pushing for more. It seemed to get worse every time her mother would reappear. We lived in apartment buildings next to each other in Brooklyn. They were close together, but not attached. There was maybe three and a half feet between our flat rooftops. When her mother would reappear, Willow would come to my apartment, jumping from roof to roof. She'd straddle the jump, not thinking twice about the 30-foot drop to concrete below her. She'd go from being wild to dangerous.
There was a hollow feeling in the pit of my stomach listening to him talk about Willow. For so many reasons. I'd met Drew around the same age as he'd met Willow. I knew how my story ended, and now I knew his wasn't going to be pretty either.
I could spend hours telling you the shit we went through together over the years. But I'd rather fast forward and give you the Cliff Notes version so you can understand why I lost it today.
Okay. By the time we were seniors in high school, Willow had followed in her mother's footsteps. She'd found drugs and quickly went from experimenting to chasing a high on a daily basis. Brody let out a humorless laugh. You should see the looks you get riding the subway at 2 a.m. with an 18-year-old you just pulled out of a crack house and a 70-year-old woman in a bathrobe and curlers. There were nights when I'd have to toss Willow over my shoulder because she couldn't walk, and poor Marlene would be right next to me. Brody paused again, and his next words hit me hard. I hated her so damn much, but I couldn't make myself stop loving her. I laced my fingers together with his and squeezed. I was recruited by some of the best colleges in the country, but I wanted to stay local. Senior year, I'd narrowed it down to Syracuse and University of Georgia. My dad was pushing for me to be a bulldog, and we all knew why, although we didn't talk about it. When Willow disappeared for 6 weeks right before I had to commit to a school, I was so pissed off at her, I committed to Georgia. After I left, I kept in touch with Marlene and kept tabs on Willow, but I started to move on.
That's understandable. It sounds like you'd already done so much.
The summer between my freshman and sophomore year, I came home. Marlene had had a mild heart attack, and it seemed to have woken Willow up. She was clean and even had a part-time job at a music store that she loved. We spent a lot of time together, and I hated to go back to school when August rolled around. I felt like I had the girl back I'd fallen in love with, and I was afraid she'd disappear again when I left. Marlene sensed I was considering not going back, so she decided she and Willow were going to fly down for homecoming weekend to see me play. That way, I was going to see her again in only 3 weeks. Brody paused again. I promise. I'm finally getting to the point of dumping all this shit on you.
Take your time. We're in no rush.
He nodded. Anyway, 2 days after I got back to school and we started practicing again, Willow stopped answering her phone. That was never a good sign. I talked to Marlene, and she said Willow hadn't come home all weekend. We were practicing 6 hours a day. NFL scouts were starting to come to practices, and all I wanted to do was go back home. But I couldn't. Eventually, Willow surfaced again, most likely because she had run out of money, and the next 3 weeks she played on her grandmother's weaknesses. I hadn't actually expected her to show up for homecoming, but somehow Marlene got her on the plane. She meant well. She thought getting her away from her dealers and back near me might help, but scoring on a college campus is a heck of a lot easier than some people might think. After homecoming, Willow disappeared, and Marlene and I spent a week looking for her. But the drug addicts I threatened to help me find her were more scared of losing their source than they were of me beating the shit out of them. People with nothing aren't easy to find. I was afraid to ask how she eventually turned up, but since we hadn't gotten to Colin yet, I knew the worst was yet to come.
I don't even know what to say.
You don't have to say anything. I do. I owe you an explanation and an apology. If you'll have me when I'm done explaining, I hope to give you a long, multiple apology.
Even in the middle of an obviously painful story, Brody was... Brody. It made me smile, for the first time since the bleachers this afternoon. Well, then get on with the story so we can get to the apology, I teased. At that moment, we needed a little levity.
Colin was a freshman at Georgia. We'd met the first day of August practice, and I didn't like him right away. He had a gigantic chip on his shoulder, and constantly talked about women like they were sexual objects. Not to mention he had a short fuse that was easily lit. Guy's still an asshole. Whereas before Brody sounded like he was close to breaking, speaking of Colin changed his tone. Anyway, one night, some of the guys in my frat dragged me to a party. It was off campus, and I really wasn't in the mood to begin with. When we got there, it wasn't the standard keg and plastic cup college drunk fest. The place was a hellhole, and there were some pretty seedy-looking people smoking crap from a glass pipe that smelled like burned plastic. Colin was already there with some of the other freshmen from the team. He was bragging about some girl he was going to get with. She was getting high with his buddy, and he could tell she was down for it. It was shaping up to be a good party. The way he was talking about the woman made me sick. I voiced that if the woman was too high to know what the hell she was doing, it was shaping up to sound like fucking rape to me. I knew it had to be something bad for you to react that way today. That's not the half of it. It was getting worse by the moment. My original assumption that two men had fought over sharing some cheerleader was starting to feel like wishful thinking. I had driven to the party, and some of the guys wanted to stay for a while, so I wound up staying longer than I wanted to. More and more people were showing up, and I didn't like the looks of most of them. I wanted to get the hell out of there before the cops arrived. Eventually, I told the guys I was going to the bathroom and then leaving. They could come or find their own way back to campus. There were people all over the place, so at first, it didn't seem strange that two guys were waiting outside of a closed door next to the bathroom. While I was waiting my turn, I asked what they were doing. And one of the guys said their friend was inside with some hot crackhead. No, I don't know why. But I still didn't put two and two together. I went to the bathroom, came out, and saw the two guys still standing there. Halfway down the stairs, I heard one say to the other, "What's the chick's name Collins got in there?" The other asshole responded, "I don't know, Rose, Violet, Meadow, some sort of flowery shit." My hand went to my chest. Oh, God. I'll save you the details. But Willow was in no condition to make a decision to be with anyone. She could barely speak. I had to carry her out of there. That's rape. It almost was, if you ask me. Luckily, it never got that far. Colin claimed they were fooling around, and then he realized how out of it she really was and tried to help her up. With his pants fucking open, he was trying to help her. Did anything ever happen to him? Other than my fist breaking his nose? No. I went to the police. But it was pretty much my word against his. Willow didn't remember anything and had disappeared again by the time they finished their investigation. The whole thing was sealed, and I had to throw him the ball for another 2 years. I thought I was finally rid of the asshole, until the Steel's mid-season trade. And then he used me to screw with you by making that comment about sharing. I'm sorry he said anything to you. It's not your fault. Maybe. But I'm sorry about the way I acted. And about not coming right to you after the coach reamed me a new asshole. Did you get suspended? I won't know until tomorrow. A fine is definite, but I'm hoping that's all I get. Coach was a lot calmer when I left. Where did you go after you talked to him? I just needed some time to clear my head. Get my shit together before I came to you. I don't want the past to be part of my future anymore. I appreciate that. I really do. Do you forgive me? There was so much more I wanted to know, the least of which was whatever became of Willow. Was she still a part of his life? But looking into Brody's eyes at that moment, I saw what telling the story had done to him. He really needed a break. I don't think I forgive you yet. No, Maybe I will after I get those multiple apologies you promised.
Brody reached down and grabbed a handful of my ass, squeezing.
There's nothing else I would like to do than fuck you full of sorry.
What became of Willow could certainly wait until tomorrow. Delilah. Chapter 17. We slept in the next morning, having spent until the sun began to rise, working hard on those apologies. Warm water beaded over my achy muscles as I reached out with both hands and braced myself against the shower wall. Closing my eyes, I replayed the way Brody had looked as he'd come undone last night. I wasn't sure if it was emotion still running high from our talk or not, but the sex had felt special, more intimate. Less like sex, and more like making love. The thought made my heart squeeze. The last person I'd felt that with was Drew. I knew it was ridiculous, but a part of me felt guilty for the feelings growing inside of me. Brody had said last night that he wanted to keep the past behind him. I did too. But in order for me to do that, I needed to tell him that a part of my heart would always be with another man. I was halfway to my 11 a.m. appointment to interview one of the assistant coaches of the Texas Lions when I got a call that they needed to push back the time until 2. Brody had already left for practice, so rather than return to my empty hotel room, I decided to stop for a second, much-needed cup of coffee. The inside of Starbucks smelled of pumpkin and everything fall, which seemed odd considering it was almost 80 outside. "I'll have a pumpkin spice latte. I was coming in for a plain old coffee, but the smell got me." The tiny barista's words were spoken rapid-fire. "Tell me about it. I've had 3 already today." Gee, I'd never have guessed. "What's your name?" She pointed her Sharpie to a tall cup. "Delilah? That's a pretty name." My eyes drifted to her name tag. Puma. She caught me noticing. "Yep, it's my real name. My parents were hippies." I tried to sound sincere. "It's nice. Unique." "At least they gave me a cool middle name. Ophelia. That sort of sounds like Delilah. And my married name is nice and simple. Or..." I smiled and moved to the other end of the counter to wait for Pooh to make my latte. Settling into an oversized leather chair in the corner, I sipped my pumpkin spice latte and flipped open my MacBook to catch up on the morning news. My tongue prickled as the hot pseudo-coffee burnt the tip. Damn it. When I logged into WMBC's live news web feed, my eyes did a double take. There, on the front page of an Associated Press sports article, was a picture of Brody and me coming out of the elevator the other day. It was a shot taken from an angle, but you could clearly see his hand on my ass. Then I read the headline. WMBC Reporter Love Triangle. Underneath, there were a few pictures of the locker room would-be brawl,